/giving. The why for a better us.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lurie. Well, coming up, we're going to open the phones to talk about the president's latest moves on repealing Obamacare. We'll talk with some prominent local writers first. It's about a fundraiser next week to help reduce hunger here in the Tampa Bay area. The University of South Florida's English department is holding a writer's harvest. It takes place next Tuesday, this coming Tuesday, from 6:30 to 9 p.m. in the evening at the Oxford Exchange in downtown Tampa. And this year's event features Shane Hinton, Chelsea Dingman, and poet laureate Peter Meinke. The event is open to the public, and all proceeds will benefit Feeding America Tampa Bay. And we've got three of the writers who are involved in setting up this Writer's Harvest event on Tuesday. Ira Sukrungrung, and also here is Adam Carter. Both are with USF in Tampa. And then also here is Shane Hinton, who is a professor at the University of Tampa. It's great to see all three of you. Thank you for coming by WMNF.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks so much for having us.
So, Adam, what would you add to what the description of the Writer's Harvest event this coming Tuesday? What else should people know about it?
Well, we've got a great lineup, and everyone has donated their time. Oxford Exchange has donated the location. So everything we're doing at this event is going to go straight to Feeding America Tampa Bay. So it's a great event in that sense. We've also had some donors donate some prizes for raffles as well. So we've got some gift certificates, local food, some local art, some books. So people that come out, all we're asking for is either a $5 donation or three canned goods, and that'll get you in the door and have a great time.
Okay, and I'm supposed to stop you when you name prices, but it's okay. the FTC will probably go after me. But no, it's not. They won't. I'm sure they won't. It goes to a good cause, right? How could the FCC complain about that?
Exactly.
So I want you're all really talented writers in your own right, and you know, Shane, you've written about. I hesitate to describe it, but you've written about weird Florida.
Yeah,
is that right?
In fact, yeah. yeah. Weird Florida is maybe one of my trademarks, actually. Yeah, so I write a lot of what I would classify as kind of absurdist fiction. It's set in the Tampa Bay area. This place is really important for me. I grew up outside of town in Riverview on a strawberry farm. And so a lot of my writing is really informed by this place and both how you know, beautiful and interesting it is, but also just kind of how strange it is, especially in comparison to some other places around the country.
It's not like Walter Mitty ends up in weird places in Florida, is it?
No, I don't think I would say that.
All right.
But,
okay.
But yeah, so I wrote a collection of short stories that came out a couple of years ago with a small press that's based out of Orlando, Borough Press, who are a really awesome nonprofit organization dedicated to promoting literary culture in Central Florida. And I've also got an anthology of Florida writing coming out just in a few days here, actually on November 7th from Borough Press as well, featuring Florida writers writing about Florida, poetry, fiction, nonfiction. It's called We Can't Help It If We're From Florida. It's kind of an homage to an old punk compilation from the early 80s. So, that's really exciting. Definitely being a Florida writer is a big part of my identity as a writer.
So you would think that if you grew up in Riverview, that all this stuff would be normal to you.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it is in a way, right? I think that a lot of that's what I try to tackle in a lot of my work is normalizing the really strange experience of living here, for sure.
I take it that we're going to hear a lot of readings Tuesday night mm-hmm. at the event at the Oxford Exchange. Can you tell us, just give us one story from one of your books that you like to tell?
I have a story in my first story collection that really resonates with people called All the Shane Hintons, which is about the experience of Googling yourself and kind of turning up all these people who share your name and discovering that you have these weird connections based just solely on this on the fact that, you know, not only do you guys share the same name, but also now in our current moment, we're able to weirdly discover all these other people, right? So the story and the narrator in the story invites all the Shane Hintons for a barbecue, three-legged race and the whole deal. But there's some, of course, some unsettling things taking place behind the scenes, too.
Because it is Florida.
Right.
There's always got to be that Florida. Well, we're talking about the Writer's Harvest that takes place to benefit Feeding America Tampa Bay. It takes place at the Oxford Exchange this coming Tuesday night. at 6:30 p.m. in downtown Tampa, and three of the writers who are behind it are with us right now. That's Shane Hinton. He's a professor at the University of Tampa. Also here is Adam Carter. Adam, tell us about the kinds of things that you write.
Well, I'm a second-year student with the MFA program, so I'm still under the tutelage, but the writers that couldn't be here today, Chelsea Dingman, actually graduated from our program as well, and she's an amazing poet who just came out with her first book called Thaw, which I think we're all really excited about.
Mm-hmm. So why do writers take on the issue of hunger? Where did the idea for this come? Ira?
The Writer's Harvest reading is actually a national reading that happens across the country at universities in creative writing programs across the country. And so when I came here 8 years ago to Tampa, I wanted to start at a Writer's Harvest here, right? And why not? Why not? This is the perfect place to not only celebrate literature and poetry and the word, but also a place to really call attention to a problem in our country. So really, it's both the Harvest was designed to be about poetry and prose, but to also help the needy.
Mm-hmm. We think in a country like ours, sometimes we don't think about people going to bed hungry.
Yeah, we don't. And I actually think one day is not enough, right?
Yeah.
In fact, we should be giving every single day.
Right? So, Ira, tell us about your writing. What do you write about?
One of my latest books is Melting Season. It's a collection of stories. It's about food and culture and food and family. My book that won the American Book Award in 2015 is called Southside Buddhist. It's about growing up in the Southside of Chicago. It's almost like an oxymoron, right? How can you be Buddhist in the Southside of Chicago, right, where everything's gray and concrete? But, you know, for me, growing up there and living there, I actually haven't been to a more Buddhist place, right? Which is to say, every day, the people who live in the South Side of Chicago, these Polish, Irish factory workers, they wake up and all they think about is the now. They don't think far ahead, right? And there's something beautiful about that.
They live in the moment?
They live in the moment. They live in the moment, right? So the book is about growing up in that world, but it's also growing up in an immigrant Thai family, right? Mm-hmm. And kind of redefining what the immigrant narrative is. And I think our culture looks at the immigrant narrative in one way, but the Thai immigrant is a different type of immigrant. And so part of the book is also addressing that.
When you did your family, are you first generation?
I'm first generation, yeah.
So when your family came here, was there a tendency in anybody, did anybody in your family decide, well, I'm going to leave the Buddhist tradition behind and adopt something else?
Absolutely not. That wasn't even a question. And I think to me, one of the things that I, as a writer, I'm always kind of working on is what it means to be Buddhist. For a long time, Buddhist was a family religion instead of a religion, which is to say 95% of Thai immigrants or 95% of Thai people are Buddhist. So I was born into the religion. Now, as I'm getting older, I'm trying to separate family and religion, figure out what is Buddhism.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking of the South Side of Chicago as a pretty tough place.
Oh, it's a tough place, yeah.
So and a Buddhist is never shocked.
No, not at all. I'm not shocked. And I think one of the things that I learned in the South Side of Chicago is not only that every day is the same day, right? And that you should really appreciate what you have now. But I think what I learned in Chicago, in the South Side, was that this is a world where there's not everyone gets the same things, right? But you need to appreciate what you have. Right. And that's one of the things that, you know, I keep thinking about. I keep thinking about my friends and family who still are in Chicago, who really do love what they do and love where they are and love who they are.
Mm-hmm. Just parenthetical. I mean, this is the anniversary, the 1 year anniversary of the death of the king in Thailand. This is a really important time for people from Thailand.
Oh, absolutely. The king was the most beloved man in the country, right? I was just in Thailand this summer. I just spoke to my mother last night, and she said it's the 100 days have passed since his passing. And it's a country that is right now very sad about this loss, but also a country that's looking forward to what comes next.
Mm-hmm. So, and tell us about some of the other people that are going to be there. You mentioned one of the professors from UT.
Right, we have...
Or from USF, rather.
No, absolutely. Yeah. That's fine. Chelsea Dingman, who I mentioned, and Shane Hinton, who you already heard from, and then absolutely not to be forgotten is Peter Meinke, who is the Poet Laureate of Florida and also a prolific novelist. We have an amazing lineup this year and really appreciate them donating their time.
All right, so people can bring money, doesn't cost that much, right. Or three canned goods.
Absolutely.
All right. Is there anything else that you'd like to tell us about the event that's coming up on Tuesday?
Well, I've been really fortunate to attend this event for the past several years, and just like Ira was just saying, I think that you know, there's something really important about the role of the writer in our culture in noticing things that other people don't notice and being able to call attention to things that other people are willing to let slide by, right? And so this event really, I think, serves dual functions in that it helps to create and foster a really thriving literary community that we have in Tampa right now, and an up-and-coming literary community for sure, but also a chance to really contribute in a concrete way to the culture and to the society, and instead of just the kind of more abstract way that we do through our creative work, right? It's a chance to actually get our feet on the ground and do something that's really concretely impacting people's lives.
Well, it's great to have all three of you here. The event is taking place this coming Tuesday. It's the Writer's Harvest. It takes place at the Oxford Exchange. What's the address of the Oxford Exchange? It's right there just off Kennedy Boulevard in downtown Tampa near Mise en Place, just across from the University of Tampa. So, Shane, you can walk to it.
Right. Yeah. It's absolutely. It's across the street from the front gates of UT. UT's address is 401 West Kennedy Boulevard. So you plug that into your GPS, you'll get pretty close.
All right. 6:30 this coming Tuesday night. Readings by all three of you?
It'll be Shane, Chelsea Dingman, and Peter Meinke.
Okay. And thanks a lot for coming by. And it goes till 9 o'clock.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, great to have you all here. Shane Hinton has been here, and Adam Carter, and Ira Sukrung Rung. And Ira, I'm so sorry, but thank you for coming by.
Oh, thank you.
It's great to have you here.
Thanks for having
us. Thanks for having us.
You're listening to 88.5 FM. This is WMNF in Tampa. Music from Oliver Mitikudzi. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa. We're going to talk about the president's latest moves on health care right now. The president overnight, in a move that is likely to roil insurance markets, I'm reading from the Associated Press, President Trump will immediately halt payments to insurance companies under the Obama-era health care law that he's been trying to unravel for months. Here's Mike Gracia from the Associated Press. This is his report from this morning about what the president's trying to do. President Trump plans to stop subsidy payments to insurers, according to two people familiar with the decision who sought anonymity because they were not authorized to speak publicly. The White House has released a statement saying the Department of Health and Human Services has determined no appropriation exists for the payments to insurers under the Obamacare law. The decision is likely to be challenged by various state attorneys general. Yesterday, Trump signed an executive order to make lower premium plans more widely available. The White House describes the orders as first steps in dismantling the Obama health law. Mike Gracia, Washington.
Now, CNN's Chris Cuomo interviewed Congressman Jim Jordan of Ohio this morning on CNN with a Republican lawmaker defending President Trump's actions to withhold the cost-sharing subsidies that help stabilize the individual Obamacare insurance market. Here's part of that interview that went on this morning on CNN. Chris Cuomo and the Congressman Jim Jordan from Ohio.
More things that don't come true.
I didn't promise them that stuff on Obamacare.
Now the president is trying to fix it, and we're trying to fix it. You said you'd make it fixed, you'd make it better. You cannot find a reasonable health care analyst who will look at cutting the subsidies, shrinking the enrollment period, and doing other things that the president is doing in this executive order and that you were trying to do in your bill that makes it better in the main for American families. Seems to be about sucking money out of it and using it for something else, but you're doing it on the backs of the most needy.
You're acting like these CSR payments are the reason this thing is such a mess. That is not the case.
No, I'm these making CSR those payments are really important in stabilizing health care for people who
you
need
help. You can't stabilize this thing. It's already falling apart. That is what everyone understands.
But you're making it fall apart by pulling the subsidies, shrinking the enrollment period, and messing with the rollout of the plan.
Chris, think about your logic. You're saying the folks who passed this law, who told us nine different statements that were absolutely false. The architects told us on camera that, yeah, we misled the American people. The thing is falling apart. And now you're saying President Trump, by stopping an unconstitutional activity, is somehow is the cause of the problem. That makes absolute no sense.
You're arguing, if you want to do the syllogy game, you're arguing that imperfection, and nobody would argue that the ACA is perfect, is
that's for sure.
That the imperfection is now going to be the enemy of any progress at all. Because you're not making progress on this.
I'm arguing we should do what we said. And that is what the president is doing. We should do what we said. We should repeal it and replace it. And we did that in the House. I actually reintroduced the clean repeal legislation. We've had this conversation before.
And your own party couldn't agree on it. Because they know, too many of you.
Unfortunately, you are right.
And why?
Six Republican senators voted against the very legislation they had supported 20 months ago. And that drives American voters crazy. And well, it should.
No, look, some voters, it drives crazy. Some. And some of those same voters are going to be hurt by what you're doing right now by endorsing this executive order.
No, they're being hurt by Obamacare. Plain and simple.
But you're messing with Obamacare to the disadvantage of millions of people who need the help.
Six million low-income Americans. Premiums have skyrocketed under Obamacare. If you're in the individual market, a family today is spending $1,000 a month for a $10,000 deductible plan.
And they were told
those premiums were going to go down by the people who passed this law. And now President Trump and Republicans are trying to change it, repeal it, and replace it. And yet, somehow we're to blame. That makes absolutely no sense.
Hold on a second, Jim. You're going to be to blame. Because what the president's doing right now is subverting the law in a way where it's going to cause loss, and that's on you because it didn't have to happen.
He's not subverting a law. He's stopping unconstitutional payments to insurance companies who've made record profits the last few quarters.
If you want to deal with costs in health insurance, do it. What I'm saying is this. You got to tell the whole truth when it comes to the ACA.
That's the president's executive orders, interstate shopping, allowing associations
to support. That doesn't make it cheaper.
Those are going to help with improve competition and begin to bring down costs. That's why he's doing it.
No, first of all, some states allow it now. We haven't seen that kind of cost savings. Second of all, they price insurance based on where you are, not where they are. So there's a little bit of a specious argument in terms of what the premise is of going across state lines.
Here's what I know. When you let people
get cheaper plans, thank God like you, me, younger, healthy, we're okay. We're going to get priced better if we did it on our own. Maybe. One, that usually, not usually, sometimes comes back to bite us in the behind. Because then when we have need, our plan doesn't cover it because it's only a catastrophic plan. Second, you know that insurance isn't about just you and me. It is about the collective. And when you sure. pull out the people like us and those who are younger, I may be giving us too much credit. We're probably a little bit too old to really change the market price.
I'm older than you.
But when you take the younger and the healthy people out, you change the price scale. When you pull these subsidies out, which you're endorsing, you're going to hurt those lower-income people, but you're also going to hurt other people because the insurance companies are still going to make their money.
Now, you know what I'm endorsing? I'm endorsing keeping our word. I'm endorsing doing what we said we would do. That's what the president's doing. That's what I want to do. That's why the American people are so frustrated, because we told them we were going to repeal it and replace it, and we haven't got that done.
And you're okay with him doing it by executive order when you have pounded executive orders in the past?
I'm okay in doing everything we can to help the families who have been hurt by this law. That was, when it was passed, they were told 9 different false statements. They were lied to by the architect of Obamacare, Jonathan Gruber. I'm okay with changing all that and giving them better insurance, better health care, and that's what we're focused on doing. But in real simple terms, let's keep our word. Let's do what we said. That's what the president is focused on. That's what I'm focused on. That's what the Freedom Caucus is focused on. Unfortunately, you're right. We had 6 Republican senators who voted against the exact same same sentences, same comments, same punctuation.
That a president doesn't write law, it executes them. Now you're saying, well, but sometimes it's okay. That's what you're saying.
No, I'm not saying that at all. I said he should do it consistent with the Constitution.
Well, that's a bit of an exchange this morning between CNN host Chris Cuomo and Congressman Jim Jordan of Ohio about the president's decision to withhold cost-sharing subsidies that help stabilize the individual Obamacare insurance market. So here's the question. Did President Trump act in the best interests of the American people when he announced this move last night, when his staff announced this move last night? What do you think? 813-239-9663. Is the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare net positive or net negative for you? And the president says he's a champion of working people. If you're working for a living, does this help you? Maybe you have a job in which you have health care already, or maybe you have a job in which you don't have health care. What do you think? 813-239-9663. Is the president acting in the best interests of the American public? 813-239-9663. Let's go to Gina in Tampa first. Hi, Gina. You're on WMNF. What would you like to say?
Yeah, well, that was a pretty good spirited debate there. In answer to your question, no, I don't. This President Trump has been disingenuous. He promised, as candidate Trump, to replace the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, with something that would cover more people, be more affordable, and provide better coverage. How does this do that? I mean, in every try, the two that Congress came up with, and this now that Donald Trump is doing through what, executive order, through fiat, how does that help more people by providing what, bogus insurance? I mean, they can say it's a watered down insurance. That's bogus insurance. It's not going to help anybody. And now getting rid of the subsidies that help people afford any insurance coverage. I mean, how does that help anybody? And I just wanted to say one more thing. It seems that President Trump's focus is not on his focus is on doing things that are would fight President Obama. If you look at that, not to go on a different subject, but everything that he's doing is just dismantle every hallmark achievement of President Obama. And the presidency isn't for petulant little boys. And that's all I have to say.
All right. And Gene, just a quick one. That is, the president yesterday moved to allow insurance companies to sell across state lines. And we heard Congressman Jordan there say that that's going to help lower premiums for people. What do you make of that?
Well, I think, that in itself is a good idea. But if they can offer plans that are really not planned, how does that really, in the long run, how does going to help people? If people can't afford it because there's no subsidies, what's the point?
Gina, thanks a lot.
The subsidies did. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for getting the conversation going. I'm just going to read a little bit from the Washington Post. This is about the president's latest moves on health care. Trump has threatened for months to stop the payments, which go to insurance companies that are required by the laws to help eligible consumers afford their deductibles and other out-of-pocket expenses. But he held off while other administration officials warned him such a move would cause an implosion of the ACA Obamacare marketplaces that could be blamed on Republicans, according to two individuals briefed on the decision. The Washington Post goes on to say that health insurers and state regulators have been in a state of high anxiety over the prospect of the marketplaces cratering because of such White House action. The 5th year's open enrollment season for consumers to buy coverage through ACA exchanges will start in less than 3 weeks, and insurers have said that stopping the cost-sharing payments would be the single greatest step the Trump administration could take to damage the marketplaces and damage the law. Ending the payments is grounds for any insurer to back out of its federal contract to sell health plans for 2018. Some state regulators directed ACA insurers to add a surcharge in case the payments were not made, but insurers elsewhere could be left in a position in which they still must give consumers the discounts but will not be reimbursed. A spokeswoman for the American Health Insurance Plans, an industry trade group that's been warning for months of adverse effects if the payments ended, immediately denounced the president's decision. Millions of Americans rely on these benefits to afford their coverage and care, Christine Gross said. All right, so that's a bit of what the Washington Post reported about the president's latest moves on health care. What do you think, does the president help the American people by doing this or hurt them? Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Let's go to Walt in St. Pete. Hi, Walt, you're on. What would you like to say?
Hey, Rob, good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, you know, I am an Obamacare policy holder, I guess we'll call it, and I get my insurance, I pay it to Missouri, so a company called Ambetter Insurance. But if the president gets rid of the subsidy, I'm a 59-year-old male, pre-existing conditions, not that we're talking about that, but I'm a person that will lose the ability to afford insurance. I mean, I make about $26,000 a year. My subsidy is $506 a month. My insurance costs me $62.88 a month through the Obamacare, ACA, whatever you want to call it. And I'm happy with what I got. I have a maximum out-of-pocket of $2,000. My prescriptions are free as long as they are generic. I mean, I don't have a problem paying for insurance as long as it's affordable. And that, to me, for the money that I make, is affordable. I don't know what President Trump has in his head. I don't think he has a grasp on reality of what people really need for insurance.
And Walt, are you assuming that your insurance, if these subsidies go away, that now you'd have to pay something like $560 or $570 a month for insurance? Is that what your assumption is?
Well, if they're saying that they're going to take away the subsidy, then I'm under the assumption that my insurance is going to go from, you know, $63 a month to the 63 plus the 509.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. So that's what you're, yeah. Well, and what would that do to your budget?
Well, that would just, you know, shoot a giant hole in it. I mean, you know, you're talking about, I don't know, I don't have a calculator, but, I mean, you're talking about almost $600 a month times 12 months. What is that?
$7,200, yeah.
$7,200 a year right off the top of $26,000. I mean, you're talking about a third of my income, you know?
So when the president this morning again said that the Obamacare plan has essentially been a disaster for the American people, that's not what happened to you. It hasn't been a disaster for you.
Not at all. I mean, I'm happy with the Obamacare policy that I found. And believe me, I mean, I looked for 3 days. I mean, I really looked at all the policies that were out there, and you really had to pick and choose, you know, being the 59-year-old male that I am. And you really had to do your homework to find a policy that fit specifically for yourself. I don't think a lot of people did that, and they got so discouraged at the time looking for policies, they just didn't know what to do anymore. I mean, we're at a point where somebody, I don't know who it's going to be, the three generals or somebody's really got to sit this guy down and get him a grasp of the reality. Say, listen, most of these people are living on $40,000, $50,000 a year. You just can't take that money out of their pocket. And that's really what he's doing.
All right. Well, thanks a lot. Thanks for taking part. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right. All right. So there is a really good, interesting call. Here's something completely different from what Walt said. This is Jeff writing. He sends this email. He said, if Obamacare, now listen to this. Tell me if you think this makes sense. Jeff writes, if Obamacare really was affordable, they wouldn't need subsidies. Removing the subsidies is not supposed to fulfill all of President Trump's promises. It's just supposed to start the process of filling them. If you remove the subsidies and prices go up for people like Walt, what are the Republicans offering? What is President Trump offering to help? Is he offering anything? 813-239-9663. Walt, thanks a lot for your phone call. Let's go to Gary in Dunedin. Gary, has this been a net positive, net negative for the American people?
Well, I was really surprised and glad for the last caller. He's paying far less in premiums and has a far lower deductible than I get through my employer. But I called up my human resources department and my health insurance company and asked them, do you have any idea how Trump's latest insane proposal will play out? And they, of course, said, we don't know for sure, but we would believe that health insurance companies will have to replace the lost subsidy money by raising the premiums on everyone else, not just the people who had been on Obamacare pool policies, but all of us. They said also that many people will be priced out of the market so that they don't have any health insurance. I have one other thing to say is that have you noticed that Trump is like a daily bomb thrower? He's like a chaos man. I remember Obama's presidency and even Bush. We had crises that were ongoing, like he lied us into the war, or Bush, or Benghazi. But it didn't seem like every single day the president was doing something that was outlandishly bizarre, cruel, weird, controversial, and that we were always having to be worried about politics and our president. Now he's taken over our consciousness so that every day he does some horrible thing, and we just are kept like a fighter that's being hit from all sides, and we can't get our balance. He's scary.
All right. Well, Gary, thanks a lot. Thanks for calling up and telling us, too, what your HR folks said. Great to hear from you. All right. 813-239-9663. Ron in West Tampa says, Trump hurts many by what he did last night, and Obamacare is imperfect, but it helped many people. Trump and Congress want to toss subsidies, especially tossing the poor to the curb. Single payer is the best answer. That's Ron in West Tampa. Terry writes this, why scrap it or refuse single payer if you only might make it better? Poor choices, bait and switch, sickening, best. That's Terry's email. And Joey writes this, of course Trump is trying to help the American people as long as you realize he means when he says what he means when he says it. The American people mean his people, the people who we call corporations, which the Roberts Court of fascist activist judges has determined are people. Our democracy has been replaced by a corporatocracy, which rules by proxy, by the actions of the corporate whores in Congress and the Senate. That's Joey who's out there listening. All right, so my question at the start was, do the president's latest moves on health care help the average American? And are they a net positive or a net negative? And we're taking these calls as they come in. 813-239-9663. Email address is dj@wmnf.org. And let's go to Isis and Brandon. Hi, Isis. You're on. What would you like to say?
Yes, hi there.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. I'm actually in the store. because I'm off today, but I am in the insurance industry. And definitely think that it is going to affect a lot of people by taking away those subsidies. I know for a fact that a lot of insurance companies do have those subsidies, and it is going to drive up the prices of the premiums. That is for sure.
And Isis, do you think it's going to help? The president yesterday tried to make it easier for insurance companies to sell insurance over state lines. Do you
think that is horrible. That is a horrible idea.
And tell us why. Tell us.
Because the plans are based on your demographic of the area where you reside. That's how the actuaries and the insurance companies make the prices. And they do it based off of the prices that are in that area. So how can you... That's going to be horrible.
Yeah, and Isis, if you take the state insurance regulator, if you sell across state lines, that means that Florida's insurance commissioner would have no say in the quality of the insurance policy. What kind of quality policies will we see if they sell across state lines?
Well, you would have a situation where you were basically doing Medicare supplements and it would be a standardized system. Because that's how Medicare supplements are set up now. Mm-hmm. Where the plans are the same regardless of what state you live in, and then you pay whatever the premium is for that plan based on the area where you reside.
And that's because
based off the numbers.
That's because
the providers are charging in that area.
And that's because Medicare says you've got to provide this and this and this and this. But if an insurance company essentially becomes unregulated, if the insurance company is selling a policy,
you're going to lose a lot of benefits. I mean, this year the benefits are going to be a little bit better than previous years. But if he does that, that's definitely going to cause the prices to go up. I would see that happening within the next 2 or 3 years.
Yeah. And Isis, you're in the insurance industry. Have you seen a lot of people helped by Obamacare, by the ACA?
From what I understand, a lot of people are really happy that they have something. Because really, I think the real issue is the prices that these providers are charging. I mean, they are really overpricing everything.
All right, Isis, thanks a lot. Thanks for calling us on your day off. All right, great to hear
you. Have a great day.
You too. All right, so there's somebody in the insurance industry giving us her eyewitness account. 813-239-9663 is our phone number, and this is Radioactivity on WMNF in Tampa. Just want to take a moment and thank you if you contributed during the fund drive that ended on Wednesday. It ended Wednesday morning about 10 o'clock. And we reached our goal, so thank you so much. And that means that WMNF will be here for another 4 months. And thank you, because your donation is powering this show right now and all the other shows that you hear here on WMNF. Let's go to Richard in St. Petersburg. Hi, Richard. Has the president done the right by the American people?
Absolutely not. Back in the late 80s, because of an injury, I was put into a pre-existing. And when I went to get insurance, I found out it was going to run me $1,400 a month back then. Fortunately, then I went back to college and fell under that plan. And most of my employers since then have had insurance. But what the comment I want to make is this is fan base that jumped in saying drain the swamp, repeal, so on and so forth. That working class... What's going to happen to them, and how much support are they going to have in about, next year or so, when suddenly they find they can't afford to have health insurance anymore, or that they're not getting the tax breaks that the wealthy are? That's the only comment I want to make.
All right, Richard, thanks a lot. Thanks for making the comment. All right, so here's an email from Jim, who I think is cheering on what the president has just done. Jim says, remove the subsidies, remove mandatory enrollment, and remove the tax fines, writes Jim. That's his email. But he doesn't really explain why or how that will help the American people. So, Jim, if you want to write back, I'll read your second one, if you can explain how that's going to help the American people. 813-239-9663. Here's somebody from the 510 area code writing, this will cut the deficit and the Republicans will move ahead with their tax cuts for the wealthy. You can send your email into the studio here. Our address is dj@wmnf.org. And let's go to Fran in Largo. Hey, Fran, is this a net positive for the American people?
Oh, absolutely not. And going back to a few calls to what Gary said, it's not just health care. It's like every single day now there's another crazy thing dropped on us. And what's it going to take? Is it going to have to be twice a day before something crazy comes out of his mouth or his tweets? But this is not going to help the American people. Personally, I feel like I'm just being held hostage by him and this administration, and I'm tired of it. And now we don't let cockroaches hold us hostage or vicious pit bulls hold us hostage. We do something about it, and we've got to act before we're just completely annihilated. Essentially, he just has no feelings for us at all. He doesn't care about the American people, and he's going to leave everybody with nothing, probably try to get us in some nuclear war, I'm sick of being held hostage by this big stooge. That's what I wanted to say.
So, Fran, what are you going to do about it?
Well, I mean, what can we do? We keep listening to more and more people in his own party coming out against him, so I guess, what the heck can little people do, really, until it comes time to vote? I just hope we can get to that point where we can vote some better people in.
All right.
That's our only hope. I hope we can get to that point.
Fran, thanks a lot. Thanks for calling.
Okay.
All right, let's go to Bob in Apollo Beach. Hi, Bob. Has the president's latest move on health care been a net positive or a net negative?
I think it's a real net positive.
Okay, why?
Experience with since Obamacare has been in. 3 years ago, I finished work and I got my own individual policy. I paid $572 a month. For better care than I have now. The next year, the first year I went into Obamacare, it went up to $762, and this year for 2017, my renewal, it's $882 a month. And this is for inferior coverage to what I had before. As you're aware, there are certain requirements for Obamacare, and the policy I had before I wanted to keep, I was perfectly content with it. It was better coverage, but it was illegal because it didn't cover, things that they call essential, like maternity services for me and that kind of stuff. I'm a man. I don't need that. And doing away with this Obamacare will lower those premiums back down to at least where it was before. Now, they were even high before, but this is outrageous. I mean, it's killing me. Already, it's wonderful that maybe people get free coverage, and some of them are very deserving, I'm sure. Some of them are freeloaders, I'm sure. But already, my kids don't have things that other kids have, and I got to pay $882 a month, and it's going to go up again next year if Obamacare is not repealed. We need to get this thing repealed. I'll be happy to, listen and get offline, but my experience is I can hardly wait, and it's just to lower the cost. Obamacare has raised the cost enormously. Anyway, hey, thanks.
Bob, could I ask you two questions? Hey, Bob?
Sure.
All right, so that $882, does that cover you and your family?
No, it's just individual policy.
That's your individual policy? So you've got kids, but they're not on your policy?
They're not. Their kids are not on my policy. That's right.
Yeah, and could I ask, it's really not fair to you, but could you tell us what your approximate income is, or, are you in the top 1%, or are you in the top 10%?
Well, it's going to be a little deceptive. I used to make a pretty good income, but I retired 3 years ago. That's why I'm in the individual market now. So, frankly, my income now is quite dramatically lower, than it was.
But you're not 65 or 66. You retired early. Is that what you did?
I'm 63. I retired a couple years early.
That's all right. And so you were able to make enough money in your lifetime that you're living on your savings and your investments.
So my income right now is relatively low, but I have assets. And, so it's income is often a good judge, but not all the time. At any rate.
And Bob, the last question is, before Obamacare, were your health insurance premiums going up?
Yes, like everything else, but at a much slower rate. Now, keep in mind, I worked for a big company before that, and so I had company policies. I've only been on my own individually in the individual marketplace for these past 3 years. So my first year of experience was before there was any Obamacare influence. So I used that, and it was similar but a completely different policy than my former employer's policy.
Yeah.
So,
but Bob,
I think that the big point I wanted to make is it's the cost increases that are just killing people on this.
Yeah, well, I think that's
not
true.
Not entirely. I mean, there would be some cost increase without Obamacare, but Obamacare has driven the bulk of that. And if you look at the coverages, for example, you know, I don't take any medications except a Lipitor, the generic Lipitor, and it's way more expensive or covered less under this current Obamacare policy. But the policy costs so much more, and it's because they have these other things in there, like mental health, so-called mental health things for people who want to go to psychiatrists. And everybody wants to go to a psychiatrist and talk to them or psychologist, I think. But it attracts, you know, it runs up expenses by people doing that, which whether they need to or not.
Yeah, but Bob, isn't it the case? I mean, I don't take any drugs. I have zero prescriptions, yeah. But I pay. In my insurance policy through my employer, I pay for pharmaceutical coverage. Yet, you know, you're not going to find me taking any sort of drugs. So everybody's in that situation. You're paying for maternity. You don't like it. Well, I'm paying for pharmaceutical and I don't like it. But still, we do it because it's the way you pull resources to create a giant fund that people can draw from when they need to.
Very, very good point, and you're right about that. But you have the coverage if you should need pharmaceuticals. As we get older, you tend to need those things. Again, I only take the one generic Lipitor. I'm in great health. But the other things like maternity care coverage or drug treatment coverage or the various these mental health things that are now covered, you know, I won't need those.
Yeah.
And so it's, you know, but you may need.
But that's the way insurance works. I'm a good driver. I never get in an accident.
Yeah.
But yet, so my insurance should be way below somebody that's had accidents. But it's not the case. My insurance is, you know, pretty high. You know, insurance works that way. We're good livers, right? But we
do
it because we want to pull our resources to help everybody. That's what insurance is about.
And here's the thing that is a very good point, and to some extent. But you want to be in the risk pool in case you need pharmaceuticals, for example. Or you want to be in pool in case you have an accident, because you could. But and some of these things I'm never going to be in the risk pool for, like maternity and some others. So it's a little different. But, I mean, you raise a valid point. But it's just people keep missing. The Obamacare has driven these costs up, and it was sold to us falsely as, oh, we're going to save money. There are no savings. It's gouging people, and it's gouging people who are, look, I do okay, but just okay.
All right. Well, Bob, thanks a lot. You're the first caller to say that you think there's a net positive. So I put you on for a long time, but thanks a lot for calling in.
Thanks.
All right. So there you go. There's somebody that supports what President Trump is doing, and he believes that at the end of the process, his insurance premiums are going to go down. What do you think? 813-239-9663. Email address dj@wmnf.org. Let's go to Laura, who's in Palm Harbor. Hi, Laura. Thanks for calling in. What would you like to say?
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. My husband and I are 55, and we both do have Obamacare. We have a policy through Obamacare, I should say. Remind everybody, there is no such policy as Obamacare. When you get Obamacare, you're buying into one of the for-profit policies that are out there that are available to most people.
Right.
If we have Ambetter through Sunshine Health, which is another caller earlier said that he has. We love it. It's fine. It works for us. The subsidies make it affordable. And taking the subsidy away will be detrimental. We would probably not be able to afford it. So, and I think rates would go up for everybody too. So, you know, he's the first person, the previous caller, that doesn't like Obamacare. What's interesting is the only people I ever hear ranking it down are people who don't have it and politicians. And everybody I've ever talked to that actually does have it is quite happy with it. May not be perfect, but it's a lot better than any other option and more affordable than any other option. So I wish that Trump would leave it alone. That's all I have to say.
Thank you. All right, Laura, thanks a lot. Thank you for your phone call. We're trying to open up the phone line so everybody gets a chance to to chime in and get a sense of, you know, of the 4.4 million people that live here in the Tampa Bay area. What do you generally feel about the Affordable Care Act, or what sometimes people call Obamacare? I call it Obamacare a lot. I think the president gets credit for it. And what if it's positive, he gets a positive credit. If it's negative, he gets a negative credit for it. Let's go to Elizabeth in Riverview. Hi, Elizabeth. You're on. Has Obamacare been a net positive or a net negative?
Sir, I am in what I realize now is an entirely different position. My husband was in the military during childbearing and taking care of and all of that children. So that was pretty well taken care of. For the past 30-some years, I have been on Medicare, which of course works beautifully. I have a supplemental insurance along with it, and everything is taken care of. I understand, of course, there's a big part of the population that isn't that way, but why not Medicare for all? To me, it is a wonderful institution, or it works. I don't know.
And Elizabeth, we're going to do a whole show about that in 2 weeks. We're going to have a businessman from Pennsylvania on who runs a multi-million dollar business, and he wants single payer. We're going to find out why a businessman wants single payer, like you've got. Elizabeth, thanks a lot.
Oh yes, sir.
All right, great to hear from you. And let's go to Susan on Anna Maria. Hi, Susan. You're on. What would you like to say?
Hi, Rob. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. I feel the pain of a lot of people. I think I don't have Obamacare. I'm in the private sector, but it's no different. I mean, my insurance skyrockets every single year. And I agree with Elizabeth about the single payer. I think a lot of us do. And you have such thoughtful and intelligent callers. My advice is make it your job to call your congressman or call some from other states and make it your job to get people to the polls to vote. We have to vote. It's the only thing we have. So.
Okay. Susan, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Peter writes this. Of course, this news is making things a little confusing. He writes, the full subsidy has not been removed, only the money from the cost share reduction. That's the CSR that we heard about in that debate that we listened to on CNN. The insurance companies, for the most part, were expecting this and have adjusted the rates accordingly, writes Peter. Not sure what his source is on this. And he goes on to say that your rate will go up, but so will your subsidy. I have not seen final numbers yet for the plans in Pinellas County. I'm sure rates will go up, but it shouldn't be unusual. This is the hope or the plan I see coming. That's Peter writing. He doesn't give a source on that. Maybe that's Peter's knowledge of the industry. I don't know. And then John writes this. I'm a vet, and $80 a month for VA med copays, and still suffer a $110 deduction from Social Security for Medicare, which refuses to cover anything because of my alleged VA health care. Now I see my Social Security will be up by $1.45 a day in 2018 and expect Medicare to claim three more dollars a day. So John, not happy with the slight increase that folks are going to get in their Social Security checks. John, thank you for that. And let's go to Marie in Indian Rocks Beach. Hi, Marie. You're on. What would you like to say?
Hi. How you doing today?
I'm good. What would you like to say about Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act?
Well, we need insurance for everybody. And until we get to that point, the system's going to be broken. And nothing's going to be perfect until then, but all the damage that Trump is doing to getting us where we need to go is makes me sick, literally sick to my stomach every day. And I can't even, I right now cannot get help for my mentally ill brother who's homeless and lives on the street. They have zero out there for them. And, you know, they're all for stopping abortions, but the minute the child's born, they're not interested in any other care. So the whole thing is hypocritical, and we're just heading in a downward spiral because nobody cares about the weakest of the weak. And that really, I think, is the bottom thing with Trump is he's never been there. He has no idea what it is to have to work 60 hours a week with a tooth that's infected and killing you, but you still have to get up and go to work because you don't have insurance. you can't afford it, and everybody suffers except the people with money. I mean, it's disgusting. Because if you're fighting for the life of an unborn child so hard, why are they not fighting to protect every human that's alive and needing the help right now?
Yeah, there is a lack of compassion in Washington, D.C., no doubt about it. Marie, thanks a lot. Good. I'm so sorry to hear about your brother, but thank you.
All right, thanks.
All right, thanks. Well, if you want to comment, unfortunately, we couldn't get to everybody, but if you want to comment about today's show, please call us up at 813-238-8001. Record your comment on extension 115. We'll play those comments back Monday morning at 11 o'clock. Now stay tuned for Daniel Ruth. He's coming up next on the Midpoint program right here on